Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome again to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me
is my cousin Tino right here. Good morning, good morning.
And silent.
Silent.
And semi-silent, yeah,
no
Gary.
No more silent.
No more silent,
we can
Gary.
Forget that.
No more silent.
I try to be silent.
So we're going to have a kind of two-part show today, with kind of catching up on the news. And we're going to, the first half or 40% of it's going to focus on national politics, which is reaching a kind of crescendo or a kind of tipping point where it's going to go one way or
crisis
another.
Crisis might be another word.
Crisis. And then we're going to focus on what's going on in the legislature, particularly the two propositions before Arizonans.
Yeah, we've talked about
May
those a lot
17th.
On the show, but we want to, on 17th, I got the ballot here. I'll read from the ballot. But we've talked a lot about Proposition 123 and a little bit about Proposition 124. I've had people call me and say, I've heard all about 123. What's this 124? And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today. It's such a changing. I mean, I'm justifying talking about it again because there is so much here. These are constitutional amendments, so these are big deals. Proposition 123 is a constitutional amendment.
I don't know that the state legislature ignored Proposition 301. So,
well, that's it. And we've already done this before. That's true. As far as we thought we had done it before, and then they ignored the law.
All right, let's talk.
So
about
we're
the
getting into it. I mean, you just pulled me right into it.
Let's talk about the national election first, because that's in a way we were, you know, before the show, folks were saying that's sort of easier to talk about because there's not a lot of argument about what's happening, and although, you know, Mike may argue with him, but it looks like Indiana is tomorrow. The Indiana election is tomorrow. And that's going to seal Trump's fate or Cruz's fate, maybe. Cruz and Casey cannot logically come up with enough votes to win the Republican nomination. The only question is whether they have enough power and influence to stop Trump, right?
Right.
And if they can stop him on the first ballot, Cruz has been going around and getting all the uncommitted and even Trump delegates. See, there's two separate processes. The process, right, Mike, where you vote on who you want to be the presidential nominee of your party, and then there's the process where you select the guys who are going to do the voting.
Right.
So Cruz, they're
convention delegates.
Yes, the convention delegates, and that's so Cruz can't seem to win. You know, the races. So what he's doing is trying to steal as many of the Trumpsters, delegates as he can get his hands on. Do you guys think it's going to work?
He's a pathological religious zealot. This is the scariest. I mean, if Trump is scary, Cruz is like off the wall, man. That's why he can't get people to vote for him.
He went over like a lead balloon, I tell you, when I was on the East Coast. I mean, all they want is
Cruz is not an alternative
crazed,
to Trump.
Crazed fundamentalist from Texas. I mean, they voted for Trump big time out there.
You don't have to say any more about Cruz than what John Boehner did, the former speaker, when he called him Lucifer in the flesh. And he referred to Cruz and the entire Freedom Caucus, which, by the way, includes our Congressman Paul Gosar. He referred to them as a bunch of knuckleheads and goofballs that would absolutely refuse to compromise about anything or work with him on anything.
And didn't he say that about Cruz that he was the most miserable son of a bitch that he ever worked for?
Exactly.
I mean. I don't know what else you can say.
Well, one of the things we do on Democratic Perspective is a step back. You know, and that's the point of our show, one of the points. And what Silent Gary just said is absolutely true. These guys that won't compromise about anything, the founding fathers, which the right wing is always so thrilled to refer to, created this genteel system of political compromise. We all remember, we don't remember squat from our history lessons. And of course, we find out a lot of it was lies, like Thomas Edison, you know, stole all the Nikola Tesla stuff. But that's, you know, the founding fathers created, by putting together these systems, this genteel system that requires compromise. And we remember the Great Compromise. We remember as they tried to work through the bugs of this new republic, they found out that to avoid the tyranny of the minority and the tyranny of the majority, they had to compromise if to get what they want. So this, what the reason we have this radio show and the reason that people are upset at the government, and as far as I'm concerned, the reason Donald Trump is so popular. I heard it this morning, this collective middle finger to the government, you know, saying we just are tired of all the fighting. We don't get the doing nothing for the American people and getting $170,000 a year as a congressman to do it.
$3 billion worth of free publicity for Trump.
Well, that surely didn't hurt.
You know, certainly that's what really put him on the, you know, on the ballot and put him in the position he's in. No one else could call up a news program or a moderator or a pundit on a TV show or a radio show and immediately be put on the air and talk for 5, 10, 15 minutes and make a sales pitch and then hang up and go on to the next. No one else could do that.
And what you're saying is, I understand, you're right, the media made Donald Trump and they're, because that's where the story is. If I was an editor and they're sitting here, they said, well, that's fine.
It's fun to cover him.
The story,
it makes money. It's profitable.
The story is what's different. You know, dog bites man is not a story. Man bites dog is a story.
What was interesting, being in New York in the middle of the primary is it wasn't a lesser of two evil thing. People like Hillary in New York, and they like Trump in New York, and they didn't like Cruz, and they didn't really vote for Sanders. It's a very different environment than we have here in Arizona, for sure. But I left the feeling that the Cruz is not going to go anywhere. I mean, I think he would be a death sentence for Republican presidential aspirations.
Even with all of this, I mean, here we are sitting on Democratic perspective. I don't even think we should be mentioning, because this is Trump understands the media better than anybody in this room, and certainly anybody in national politics. That especially in 2016, say my name and I gotcha. Say my talk about me and I gotcha. Do a story on me and I gotcha. Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter if you say I'm crazy. Doesn't make fun of my hair. You make fun of my skin. All doesn't matter. As long as you use my name,
no,
I'm way ahead of the game.
No, Trump is tapping into the same thing that Sanders is, which is a decade with very different solutions.
Wait a minute.
Mike is choking.
Strangling
you. Of discontent because of the collapse of the American middle class. Now, Trump's answers and Cruz's answers are even worse to the reasons for it and the solution for it are absolutely mind-bogglingly stupid. Give the rich more money. As I think Paul Krugman wrote in a column, he said, the Republicans really is a bait-and-switch game. They always promise, you know, prosperity for the middle class,
always,
for the working class,
right,
and then they always cut taxes on the rich.
That's
the game. And then they pretend to be worried about the deficit, and then they put through plans. And you talk about a moderate like Paul Ryan, who's basically a big Republican alternative to...
He's not a moderate by any stretch of the
imagination. And his ideas are the same kind of wacko Ayn Rand stuff that you get from the rest of them.
That's true.
If I was a Republican, putting myself in a Republican place, and I was looking at Trump and Cruz, God, that's a terrible choice. I mean, that's a really, really, really hard...
You,
I think I would go with Trump.
And that was my point. It's
825...
On whatever the hell day it is, you know, and we're talking, there is no
viable Republican candidate. In other words, we're about losers. We would need to talk about who the president's going to be. It's going to be Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, period. We should be talking about that.
I wouldn't take that for granted. But I do think that what really sums up the Republican race is that Senator Lindsey Graham came out and made a speech that that someone could shoot and kill Ted Cruz on the Senate floor, and they would be unable to get a conviction, and then he turned around.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham. Yeah. A month or two later, turned around and endorsed Cruz for president. That's how much he's frightened by Trump,
right.
and he's endorsed a person that he actually despises,
and thinks is
unqualified to be president. And that sums up, I think, the state of the Republican presidency.
But
the
Republican Party, primary after primary.
The Republican Party came up with the same candidate in Romney last time. All right, he wasn't exciting. He was a plutocrat, and all he was hiding his funds. But that small change compared to the other guys he was running against. This time, wow. I mean, if I was Republican, I guess I'd write off the presidential race. And
well, I'm
I
hoping
would,
they don't vote. Know, a small turnout would be great.
I think what they're going to do and what we see the Koch brother money doing is focusing on down ticket stuff.
Yeah.
I think they're going to abandon Trump, which I think it looks like Trump's going to have it. They're going to abandon him because he jumbled all the conservative axioms, he's all over the place. These guys are, if I can say the word, these guys are tight asses and they don't, they don't like somebody who's all over the place. They'd rather have somebody like Cruz who is absolutely predictable every time he opens his mouth.
Even though it's crazy as hell. Well,
another thing I think that kind of points out the problem with the race is Trump came out and made his foreign policy speech, the first time he's read from teleprompter during the race.
That's right.
So it was something that was allegedly structured. And during his, everyone goes, ooh, all the Republicans, ooh and ah, because suddenly he's acting presidential.
Right.
What they ignored was it was complete and utter nonsense.
Yeah.
There were at least six blatant contradictions throughout his policy speech, and the bar is set so low on the Republican side that he could make this idiotic foreign policy speech, and the fact that he didn't insult people and make racist statements and make
Joaquin Paris immediately
the fact that he didn't do that for once.
Was news,
made the news, and suddenly he's presidential.
Well, headlines in the New York Times in the last couple of days was he can't find a vice president. People most of the time, people are lining up and jockeying for positions.
Because even if you lose, it's like good for your career to be vice presidential candidate.
He can't find anybody who even will take a call.
It's good to sell books if nothing else.
I think that. As a Democrat, I've never seen anything like this happen to the Republican Party.
Nobody has.
They get one of the most far-right candidates, I guess, in American history, in Cruz, and they get a guy who's a billionaire who just shoots off his mouth as the alternative. I've never seen the Republicans not come up with
something. He says horribly bigoted and ignorant. And biased things.
And don't forget racist.
And racist. I mean, we're talking.
So what's wrong with the guy?
I shoot off my mouth. This is different. This is different. This is angry. This is ugly. It's not just angry. I'm angry. He's ugly.
What I see is this. Whether it's I think Hillary now has it. I think Bernie Sanders has done. But I think whether Hillary wins or Sanders wins, the problem of the collapse of the middle class and the problem of the huge difference between the wealthy and the rest of the population is getting worse and worse. That has to be addressed by either one of them if they're elected.
The problem is that you have millions of people across the country in both parties, but especially in Republicans, that are willing to shake things up. That's what they want to do. Is Trump is the, and Cruz to an extent, are the candidates, the anti-establishment. So they're just wanting to shake things up without any thought into what the consequences are of actually electing these people.
I think, Gary, the thing is that the Republican plan, which is basically, if we cut the taxes on corporations and wealthy individuals enough, everything will be wonderful. All the boats will float high on the tide, and everything will be great. And although they've had a president that disagreed with that firmly, they've had a Congress that for many years now that has agreed with it, and lots of state legislatures. And these cuts on taxes that we're seeing in Arizona and Kansas and all these other places never yield the kind of income that is promised. And giving billionaires more and more money, it never works. And so the Republican base is furious because the basic axioms, the basic structure of the Republican Party, which is a compromise between, I guess you call them religious and political, conservative, cultural conservative, and the very wealthy donors, is like cracking up.
What's really puzzling to me is that what has really caused the problems in our country, in my view, has been Congress. We have a dysfunctional Congress. We have 60, I think, roughly 60 members of the so-called Freedom Caucus in the Republican Party that have ended up completely controlling the rest of the caucus because they refuse to go along with anything else. And so here we have people wanting to shake things up, and they're willing to vote for a Trump or a Cruz. But they're ignoring the very people that have caused the problem. We now have a Congress in this year that is on track to be the most dysfunctional, most obstructionist, most do nothing Congress in the history of the United States.
Now, in the founders' generation, there was a lot of angry thing. I mean, Aaron Burr, you know, shoots Alexander Hamilton. I mean, yeah. In a duel. But I think that Mike is right when he was talking about earlier, there was an assumption, and frankly, it was gentlemen would be ruling the state, the country. Gentlemen of a certain, you know, who had a certain amount of success, and along came Andrew Jackson and so forth and so on. So the process.
But even they couldn't completely subvert the system like it is now.
Well, they weren't trying to. They were fighting with each other, but it was like a prize fight. This has gotten like a real ugly version of back alley wrestling.
Well, the system was created. They found finally a way to bring down the very system they keep talking about praising.
I agree,
but it's I'm speechless here when it comes to the Republicans, but we, like I said, we want to talk about Democrats. The only one that has an answer is Bernie. I'm making up for the last 20 minutes of talking about Republicans. Bernie. I mean, you talk about, if we started this morning on the reason for the rise of Trump, the reason for Cruz is your middle class problem. Well, the only person talking about doing stuff for the middle class was Bernie. And now, since we've had Bernie talking about it for 6 months and doing so well, we have Hillary talking about it more than ever. And she's talking about, I mean, on Facebook this morning, it was all about supporting. If you support Mr. Sanders, you can support me, and this is why. And I'm saying, wow, that's...
I think that the message of Bernie Sanders supporters, that income inequality and that the system is non-functional, is the main, I guess you call it belief system, the main point of view. People who voted for Hillary, still fundamentally active Democrats, rather than just the general Democratic Party, are pretty much support Bernie's ideas. No, they really think that those ideas are the central ideas to a new presidency.
You have people in this state, Bernie supporters, who are calling all the other states, California, Indiana, that with the 75% win in California, Bernie's the nominee. With a 75%, I read somewhere. I don't have the source.
No, I think it's over, Mike. But then we just have to disagree on that.
Well, you sound like every other establishment Republican I've ever talked to.
I haven't been a Republican ever.
Excuse me, Democrat.
But the point is to be realistic.
Has it come to that you've insulted him that badly?
You're all the same.
It's sort of like a fight where one army appears to win the battle, but they've actually lost it. Napoleon going into Russia is the great example. He looks like he's kicking butt, but on the other hand, the Russians clobber his army so badly that within a few months he's limping back to France with, like, I think a tenth of his forces. So Bernie, I think, got his ideas out. And I think that that's a win, whether he loses the nomination or not.
I wonder if, the people oversimplify the problems with the middle class. This is a very complex issue that has been brewing since the end of World War II. And the very wealthy have been trying to undermine it ever since the Depression. There are many, many issues involved with it. I kind of wonder, I've been a Bernie supporter and I will happily vote for Hillary because I look at what her husband did when he was president and things were pretty darn good. But I also wonder if it isn't the case that you need someone who can work within the establishment to make the changes necessary, as long as there are other people out there holding them accountable.
And that's costing Bernie millions of votes. I mean, it would cost him. And that's right, because people are afraid of that it's too good to be true. That we have such a corrupt system. I mean, we have such a corrupt system. Somebody actually pure and for the people, like Bernie Sanders, would have trouble working in a system.
He's been a loner his whole time.
Who can we point to? They keep history, and that's not history. The powers that be pour dump on Jimmy Carter as an ineffective president because in some ways he was not able to work within a corrupt system.
He had a lot of bad luck, but. If you look at Roosevelt when he came into power in the 30s, he didn't have a lot of really great ideas. What he had, and this is from my Marxist friends, is he had a labor movement, and this is where whatever your politics are. He had a labor movement that had his back and that was demanding stuff. And so those of us who are skeptical about Bernie are looking at somebody who does not have a movement at his back that can change things, and we think you need somebody who knows how to manage stuff, which is, of course, Hillary Clinton.
Let's shift the gears without using the clutch.
Why not? Why aren't we using the clutch? I mean, that will be really noisy.
We're shifting hard here. So we want to talk about Proposition 124. You got two things on the ballot. As we said at the top of the show, you got Proposition 123, Proposition 124, May 17th. Ballots are in your mailbox now, or they're probably sitting on your dining room table or wherever you put this stuff. And I was going to read from the ballot, but they're really pretty boring. We're talking about two constitutional amendments to the Arizona Constitution. We've talked a lot about 123. We're going to talk a little more. But right now we're going to deal with Proposition 124. I want to quote from the president of the Professional Firefighters Association of Arizona. Prop 124 makes some constitutional amendment changes to the pension system. He said a guy named Brian Jeffries put in a booklet, and I got this out of a Montini or a Roberts article, so thank you guys from the Arizona Republic, put in a booklet sent to all voters. It's been the booklet that Silent Gary's looking at right now. Prop 124 is the product of years of partnership and productive negotiation between firefighters, police officers, Governor Doug Ducey, mayors of cities and towns, Republican and Democrat legislators. Together we have crafted a reform measure that will take the pressure off overburdened taxpayers and municipal budgets while ensuring the middle-class retirement of the men and women working on the front lines of public safety today. But being the loudmouth outlier, as it's, I play my role here. Yeah. I believe it's true, and all of that's true. So we're talking about the cops want it, the firefighters want it, the city certainly want it, but anything that the legislature wants or the governor wants, you got to be suspicious of. And what it does, it gives them control over the uniformed services, over this particular pension fund.
Well, it sets up rule. It sets up a new set of rules for now.
What's wrong with too much money for cops and firefighters? And that's all we're talking about. We're talking about a pension system that in a different time, so what? They get a little extra money.
The fact that they're for this and the fact that it's been negotiated
for
is important.
Because their backs are against the wall.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't know that their backs are against the wall. And the negative side of this is that, as I understand 124, it sets up different rules for the new guys who become policemen and firemen, and they have to contribute more to their pensions.
We're going to bankrupt your pension system if you don't go along with this.
It could bankrupt some cities' ability to pay these pensions. It needs to be renegotiated.
You go get more money. You get a job. You find a way. I find a way to increase. So if
uniform services are not
the pension system these guys got, in my opinion, I'm happy that they want it. But anytime you give the Arizona legislature control over your pocketbook, you're screwing up.
I think this is something that has to be done. And again, there's a negative side to it. If you're a new fireman, you're not going to get the same benefit. But anybody who's been in unions and seen the unions negotiate this stuff knows what's going on, which is that they can't maintain the pensions as is. And so they negotiate for the standing members get to keep their money, basically, and the new guys get screwed. To how what extent is hard to say.
I'm looking at the booklet that was sent out by the state, what's on my ballot, which gives the arguments for and against. And we get to the arguments against Proposition 124, and the page is blank. It says there were no arguments.
There is no opposition.
Prop 124.
Except for my Constantine. There is no opposition to 124.
I understand why.
I think Mike makes a point that's well taken in that anything that our legislature, our Republican legislature, and our governor are for, I am very suspicious of, because I really believe they're trying to rig the system in the state for a generation.
I disagree with that. I just think that you vote for 124. It'll ease something up. Now, more controversial, and we had the spokespeople for Proposition 123 who are in favor of it, is a much more controversial proposition. Understand that in 2000, the citizens of Arizona decided the legislature could not be exactly trusted so much with funding the school's property, and they put in Prop 301. It was followed for many years, and then the Great Recession hit in 2008, and the legislature started taking money from...
It gave them a good excuse to take money.
Earmarked for education, started taking money for it. And so the school sued in, I think, 2011, and they won the case, and it went all the way to the Arizona Supreme Court.
Keep in mind that the very time they're taking money away from the schools, illegally, unconstitutionally, they're giving yet another large tax break to corporations and the wealthy.
Now
so this was a conscious decision to take money away from the schools and give it back to corporations and the wealthy.
I have no disagreement with that. I mean, the drop in corporate income taxes last year was, right, Gary? It's $100 million. They've cut $100 million from corporate income taxes.
For 29 years in a row.
Well, over and over and over again, and then they complain they don't have enough money, right? And they complain, and they say that this will increase the economy, and it has some people will come here. I mean, if you have a call center or something, it's a great place to get you're going to have low-paid employees, and, the less taxes, the better, because you're going to have a profitable business basically kind of ripping people off. So, what do you care? But if you look at the states that are doing well, and Gary's done this on past shows, if you look at Wisconsin, which is following the kind of Arizona model, they're not doing so well. And if you look at Minnesota, who's following the sort of liberal, progressive, invest in the in your economy model, they're doing better.
Right? I would say that it's not necessarily liberal, progressive. It's just common sense. You don't deny, you don't starve the beast, you don't deny revenue for the government. And then have to, you know, force a change in cutting schools and, you know, funding for schools and other services. You look at the services that you need and want and you find ways to fund them.
So let's discuss this, but just a couple of points. It'll provide $3.5 billion to the schools over 10 years. Only 1.3 of that comes from the general fund. The rest of it comes from selling off state land trust at a higher rate.
Not true. No state land has to be sold.
State land is sold constantly. They
but
sell
no state land has to be sold to support this. There's $5 billion, $4.8 billion in a liquid cash fund, and you just said that all they need is $3.5 million. So really, over the next 10 years, if they wanted to deplete the liquid fund, they could just do that and not sell a foot of land, just to be clear.
Now, the problem is, I think, Mike, and what's really frustrating people who want the teachers to get their money and want to help education and see that Arizona education is this type crisis is what Mike and Gary were talking about earlier. They completely cut Democrats out of this deal, and they cut a deal with the teachers and with the Republican legislatures and Ducey. And in fact, the Republican legislatures were not going to do anything. They were just going to let this drag out. And even with the court decisions, and Ducey came in and sort of forced them to come to a deal. And it's a deal that increases the amount of money going to schools, but doesn't increase taxes because they're taking more money from the state fund.
You don't look down the road. You know what they're going to do. They're going to cut corporate taxes. They want to do away, just like Texas, just like Florida. They want to do away. The minute 1-2-3 passes, and we're making sure that our listeners, by the way, don't confuse 1-2-3 and 1-2-4, right? 1-2-4 is all about cops pension, 1-2-3 is all about education. But I'm still betting thousands of votes are going to be confused. And this is my problem with 1-2-3. It has nothing to do with the idea of, gee, what's wrong with funding education out of the state land trust? We got this $70 billion worth of land. Let's go ahead and use it to fund education. Good idea.
But it has to be – understand the state land trust is land given to the state of Arizona on the – When statehood
by
began,
the federal government.
By the federal government. Some people think that the feds could even sue if this thing goes through or the misuse. I think that's not going to happen.
No.
But this is what the money is. It's earmarked for schools, has always been earmarked for schools, and the question is the rate at which the money is withdrawn.
2.5 to 6.9, yeah, and that's great, and that's wonderful, but it's what they're going to do because 1-2-3 passes.
Let's take a step back and look at what Ducey has actually said, and the Republican legislature have actually said their goals are. Aside from 1-2-3, Ducey's goal is to eliminate, not cut, but to eliminate all corporate taxes in the state of Arizona.
And personal income taxes.
And personal income
taxes.
Now let's look at the state that has done that. The state of Kansas, you know, Sam Brownback as governor did that very thing, got his legislature, his very red legislature, to pass a bill that would cut all taxes on corporations. And the idea was going to be that all of the businesses from Kansas City, Missouri would stream across.
Flocking.
Yeah, stream across the river to Kansas and relocate there and create thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs in the state of Kansas. It hasn't happened. Its growth, job growth, has lagged behind every other state in the Midwest, including its neighbor across the river to the east.
And Arizona is a great state, and I don't think we have to be bottom feeders by just just trying to hook the corporations who don't want
to fly to California. Everybody, they're pissed off at California, so they want to come to Arizona, is what Ducey and his friends think.
To finish on Kansas, they are now in a position where they may not be able to afford to open the public schools next year. They can't afford to repair their roads. And this is the model that Ducey and our legislature have decided that, we want some of that.
But, Gary, isn't the problem... That has something to do with 123.
It has everything to do with 123.
Isn't it the problem to change the legislature? If we had a good legislature, 123 wouldn't be a problem. Suppose we had Democrats in control of the legislature, people who believed in public education, and we passed 123. Would there be a big problem?
And financing it, one of the many ways in financing education, I'm holding off on the answer in your question.
You're avoiding the question, Michael.
I'm not avoiding it. There's lots of ways to fund education. One of them is...
pay taxes.
123. Taking money out of the state land trust. The thing is that there's many ways to fund it. And like you said, with Democrats in office, then we'd have at least a little bit of confidence that they wouldn't choke off every other revenue source. We just happen to have this nice, constitutionally mandated benefit to education in Arizona, state land trust. We had lots and lots of public land. We still do because, quite frankly, it's Arizona. And it's all desert crapola. And so they were able to keep land prices high by keeping that land in the land trust and not making it available.
I'd like to
so
ask.
It served everybody to have that land trust. Now,
this does not, 123 doesn't really control the amount of land sold any kind of directly. It controls the amount of money dispersed from the fund, which is mostly invested in stocks and bonds and stuff.
I would ask.
But it does it as a higher rate, and it goes up to 6.9, and there's 6.9% a year. And one of the reasons the people are opposed to it is that's a fairly high rate of dispersing the money compared to the amount of money that you can make on your
stock. I'm not opposed to it because of that.
You're talking about details. I would ask you the question of why do you think that the legislature and Ducey, who have not included Democrats, by the way, in any of the negotiations or any discussion even of the state budget, why do you think they delayed the budget until after the vote on Prop 123?
Because they're sneaky bastards. Okay.
Because they want to see if the voters are gullible, in my view, enough pass the 123 to take money out of the state trust fund to pay for the schools, so the legislature doesn't have to pay for it, then they can turn around and give more tax cuts.
The other biggest statewide officer, the state treasurer, is against 123.
Every state treasurer, except for Ducey, every past state treasurer.
Why is Fred Duvall, who was the Democratic, I know Fred, he's a brilliant guy.
We've done
the show. He's in favor of Prop 123, and he actually met with Ducey and had their picture taken together, and Fred is in favor of it. And Fred and the teachers are not bad guys. If they have there must be an argument in favor of it if they're in favor of it.
Of course it's an argument in favor. They're desperate. This is really hard. They choked them. They unconstitutionally, illegally, against the Arizona Supreme Court, they choked off the funding for K-12 education, for university education. We have the largest tuition rate. Where do I begin? What Arizona has done to its schools, K-16, is criminal in America, but they've done it. So now they are so desperate. We'll take it. We'll take and believe me, I got teachers tell me this every day. I get that. Please, we gotta have this. But my point is, I want them to own what they've done to the public schools. Unless the schools shutter, unless what happens in Kansas happens in Arizona, Republicans won't own what they've done to the schools.
What's particularly telling about this issue, about this proposition, is I went to a meeting a couple of weeks ago that was discussing 123, and it was a presentation of people on both sides of the issue. what was really telling was they used the exact same presentation to arrive at different conclusions.
Exactly.
And both sides were horrified by what the legislature and the governor have done to education in this state.
Right.
And you have the people for it are so desperate they're looking for money, any kind of money to prop up the schools, and the people against it are like me, viewing it as a Trojan horse.
We have Trojan horse is a good analogy. We haven't talked about the triggers. If you're interested, because that's the other thing people talk about.
I don't think personally. I've looked at the triggers pretty carefully, and I don't think they're terrible.
That's what I was going to say. So
I don't think that's the problem. The problem is you guys are completely
talking about the triggers because we don't need to talk about the triggers.
Wait, I don't think they're a problem. I think the issue is just what Mike and Gary are talking about, which is this is an extremely sneaky, dishonest move by the state legislature who wants to increase spending to schools because people want spending schools increased, but doesn't want to increase taxes and wants to have more tax cuts.
And they're on record against public education.
I don't think we have any disagreement on it. It's whether you're going to vote for it because you think that it's a lot of gaming it out. I don't see anything good happening one way or the other for education. At least this way, I'm in favor of it. The teachers will get some money. The schools will get some money. The legislature has to change. And I hear you when you say if things get bad enough, maybe people will realize how bad things are and vote these
guys
out.
These are the same people that vote for Trump. No, I don't think so.
Well, that's my problem. That's my problem. And if that's true, then I'm sort of in favor of it because if things are not going to get better, then we might as well get the money to the schools any way we can, even if it's a horrible compromise.
I just want to point out that
start closing them, put them to work. Little fingers; they can do stuff. Right?
The party in this state and nationally has come out against any form of income tax, corporate tax, or personal income tax. They're against public education or public anything. They want to privatize education, and that's their ultimate goal. They're trying to rig the system by gerrymandering and voter suppression with solving a problem that doesn't exist with voter IDs. They're using fear and anger to suppress the vote, to make people think that it doesn't do any good to vote because we just get the same people in. Well, that's true if you don't vote. And so they're rigging the system for what I think is going to be a generation or two of if we can change it back, it's going to take years and years and years.
See, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think when we looked at what happened in the Soviet Union when it collapsed, there are these kind of tipping points. The Shah seemed to have every lever of power. He got knocked out, and so forth and so on. So I don't think these guys are going to be in control forever. I think there's a new generation coming up. There's a change in the demographics that's very hard for us or actually in Arizona to see. I don't disagree with any of the things you're saying exactly. In other words, the guys who are helping to fund the Pro 123 are two libertarian billionaires, and they've each given $1 million apiece.
Because
the guys opposing
public education
had at least in the early days about $1,000. So the bad guys are in favor of this. I have no problem with that. The people who really don't care about what they've got is a trick to fund education and get people off their back and at the same time not increase taxes so they can go and say, we didn't increase taxes and we got all this money to the school. It's painless. But the truth, the honest truth is, you have to pay for schools. You have to pay for a military. You have to pay for a foreign policy.
We want to thank Democrats at Red Rocks. But I do have to say that I'm looking at the pace of roundup of all that. Don't forget that 123 simply pays money back. It doesn't give any money. It pays money to the schools that's been denied from the schools for the last 4 years.
Absolutely agree with that.
So that,
but they'll get the money. That's my point.
I enjoyed the Payson Roundup. Check it out. He had a wonderful editorial against the American Legislative Exchange Council, the your conservative columnists statewide have a lot to say. If you're a conservative listening to the show.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM.